Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on depression when we come back. You know, if you've got a lot, 50 by 100 feet, with a 2,000 square foot house, you've still got enough space for six raised beds that contain 2,400 square feet. Now, that's called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all of the food that a family of four to six will eat in an entire year. And you can do that in the middle of the city as easily as you can out in the country. The idea that you are trapped in the city and you cannot provide for yourself and your family because of a space limitation is a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor or a plow or a harrow. If you've got a shovel, a rake, and a hoe, that's more in line with what we need for an urban French intensive culture farm. We don't need acres and acres. We don't need combines or price supports. We need pruners. We need newspaper for mulch, and we need open pollinated seed. Now, if you've got 2,400 square feet or a backyard big enough for a decent garden, you can feed your whole family 365 days a year on your own ground. And we have a seed package designed to answer your questions with the most economical and practical solutions to your long-term food needs. It has space-saving vegetables, so you need less land, less fertilizer, less water, less mulch, and less work. It's designed with immediate food availability in 28 days from seed to salad. It has flowers to attract wild pollinators because of the loss of our honeybee population to chemical sprays and disease. And it's been designed with a long harvest season to allow for fresh vegetables longer and to reduce stress by not making you can, dry, or store everything all at once. You won't need any specialized tools, just a rake, a hoe, and a shovel, and a supply of newspaper mulch is enough to plant and raise every seed in the package, and a pair of clippers and a paring knife is all you need to harvest it. And the package is designed with all non-hybrid, non-genetically modified seeds that can feed your family of four to six forever, if you're sensible, and save your seeds. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. Then you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. You know, if I was a betting man, I would be betting on food shortages in the not-too-distant future. Here in America, if you say to somebody, I think there's going to be food shortages in America, look at you like you're nuts. That's never happened in this country. Why, that can't happen here, can it? Well, like I said, if I was a betting man, and I am, I would be betting on food shortages. Food shortages. And that's because of Bible prophecy. If I hadn't read it in the Bible, I wouldn't believe that food shortages were coming to the United States either, or to Australia, Canada, or Western Europe. You know, we have, for the most part, with the exception of Ireland in 1848, and after World War II, there were some big food shortages after World War I and World War II in Europe. With a couple of three exceptions, the Western Anglo-Saxon world has been remarkably free from famines and food shortages. Famines are something that happened in China, or Africa, or maybe among the Indians and the less developed peoples of the world, but certainly not in the developed industrial world of the United States, Canada, and Australia. But I think it is, and I'll tell you why. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, there's a story in here about famine, and it's not just ordinary famine. I mean, this is an extraordinary famine. Listen to this story, and then we'll take a look at the causes of it. In chapter 28, verse 53, it says, "And you shall eat the fruit of your own body." Now, when you eat the fruit of your own body, that's called cannibalism. Cannibalism is a very rare event. First of all, famine is a very rare event, but cannibalism is even a rarer event. But here's a prophecy, verse 53, says, you shall eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and of your daughters, which the eternal your God has given you, in the siege and in the straitness wherewith your enemy shall distress you. Note that word siege. A siege, that's where you're surrounded and you're cut off, like in a city. In ancient times, they had these walled cities, and there'd be a city surrounded by enemy armies. And the people couldn't get any food or supplies in, and they couldn't get out. They were trapped. And typically, these cities would have food, you know, and provisions for a year or more. Sometimes these sieges lasted 2 or 3 years. Sometimes the enemy would just give up and go away. Verse 54 says, so that a man, nor that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother, and toward the wife of his bosom, and toward the remnant of his children, which he shall leave, so that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children whom he shall eat, because he has nothing left him in the siege, and in the straitness wherewith your enemy shall distress you in all of your gates. The tender and delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward the son, her son, and toward her daughter, and toward her young one that comes out from between her feet, and toward her children, which she shall bear, for she shall eat them for one of all things secretly, in the siege and straitness wherewith your enemy shall distress you in all of your gates. If you will not observe to do all of the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may hear and fear this glorious and fearful name, the Eternal, your God. And he goes on and says, he's going to make our plagues wonderful, and the plagues of our seed even great plagues, and of long continuance, and sore sicknesses, and of long continuance. You know, we're already suffering from that. It's called cancer, heart disease. But that story there, that prophecy about cannibalism caught in my eye. It's not the only one in the scripture, but it's dated. This chapter 28 in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, coupled with Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. And they tie into Revelation 6, 17, and 18. And when you put that whole story together, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little, it tells you a god-awful story, which is now corroborated by international geopolitics, particularly by the newsletter writers. I wouldn't suspect that Bill Buckler or Bob Chapman or Franklin Sanders would sit there and say, well, we're prophets of God, and we're here to tell you in advance about these great prophecies of the Bible. Hell, these guys probably have never even heard of Bible prophecy. And yet, here's Bill Buckler writing in the first issue of 2008, and I picked right up on it. It's on page 11, and he's talking about pouring more into a full cup. So, as I pointed out when I opened, I said, you know, if I was a betting man, I'd be betting on famine. And I'm betting on famine because we Americans have exported our industries overseas. And because we have exported our jobs and our industries overseas, to give you an illustration, we Americans import 99% of our shoes, our footwear comes from outside of our borders. Now, we have not been paying these vendors and suppliers for these shoes. We have not paid them. We have discharged them in equity with commercial paper. And the commercial paper is what we call toxic waste now. It's called CDOs, commercial debt obligations, in which we have bundled up mortgages that are non-performing and sold them around the world. And boy, are the Chinese ticked off, and the Japanese, and the Germans, and Europeans. I mean, we Americans are about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party around the world. Now, it's not that you and I, the average Joe Sixpack, did this, but our bankers did it, and they did it in our name. This is the American banking industry selling what they call toxic sludge around the world. Not only haven't we paid the Chinese for the shoes and the big screen TVs that we've been buying over the last 10 years, then we turn around and sell them a bunch of toxic waste so that we can stiff them in the process. Now, one of these days, these guys are going to cut us off. I don't know when, but at some point in time, they're going to cut us off. And when they do, that's called a siege. Trade embargo is also known as a siege. And when this trade embargo occurs, we're going to go barefoot. We don't have a shoe industry here in the United States. I can't speak for you Australians and New Zealanders and you Canadians and Western Europeans, but my guess is that you're probably about in the same boat that we are. Our garlic industry has been exported to China. Our food industry has been, and our growing capacity has been exported around the world. I was in the store the other day over at Harps, over at Walmart. They've got cherries. This is January. They've got cherries in there. Those cherries aren't being grown here in the United States, kids. They're coming in on 747s, and we're paying for those cherries, wherever they're coming from. Chile, Turkey, Argentina, maybe. They're coming from someplace around the world, and we're paying for that stuff with worthless commercial paper. And when you get stiffed and don't get paid for it, you're going to quit sending us cherries. Now, cherries in January are definitely a luxury item, but shoes aren't. And food in general isn't. Now, the theory behind gold and silver is that we're going to save up our gold and silver. And then, as my broker friend in Boise, Idaho tells me, Frank, he says, gold is money. And gold has always been money, and gold will always be money. Well, I couldn't argue much with Frank, and I told him that. I said, Joe, I think you're right, Frank. No, Frank's an old Depression kid like I am, and then he remembers back to the Depression years and the stories that came out of the Depression from his parents and grandparents. And the big problem in the Depression was that there was plenty of goods in the stores, but we didn't have money to buy it with. We had a rapid deflation. And so what we're doing today, that is the gold bugs, they're preparing for the 1930s Depression. They're not preparing for the 21st century Depression. And so remembering the old Depression of the 1930s, they're stockpiling lots of money, gold. And the theory is that when the siege occurs, when the shortages develop, they'll have the money to buy it with. And they're right, they will. But the presumption is that the goods are going to be in the store. And I'm not so sure that that's true. I believe that food will be more valuable than gold. I think that you'd be best served to store pinto beans than Kruger Rands. At least a 4-year supply, and maybe you need a 7-year supply, because all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction. And all of these things happened as examples for us to learn from. And the great famine in Joseph's time in Egypt tells us that there's a 7-year famine. The great tribulation that we see written about in the book of Revelation talks about 1260 days, or about 3.5 years. I suggest to my students that you have raised beds, and that you have a seed supply and a 4-year food supply going in, so that you can produce enough food and fiber for yourselves during this great tribulation period, whether it lasts for 1260 days or it lasts for double that period of time. You can provide for yourself. So I mentioned to you, when you lose your home, and this is the American dream today, see, the American dream is a home in the suburbs. And so you've got this house and a little patch of ground, maybe 5,000-6,000 square feet. You've traded that America for what we used to have in this country called farms. And back at the turn of the century, half the people of America lived out in the countryside on farms. And nearly everybody, even if they lived in the city, when I was a kid, it was common for people living in Eureka, California, to have a lot, a vacant lot, next to their house that they owned. So they would have a house and maybe a lot or two. They had plenty of ground to grow vegetables, kitchen gardens. Many people even had a cow or a couple of goats, or they had chickens and rabbits in the city. And then after World War II, we got modern. You know, we said, well, we're going to zone this. We ought to have zoning and planning. Let's get the livestock out of the city and let's have real cities. We want to be like the New Yorkers. We don't want goats and cows and chickens and pigs in the city. We want to have cement and parking lots. And so we do. So now in your cities, you've got cement and parking lots. Now, if you're fortunate enough to have a couple thousand square feet of ground, and I mentioned this a little earlier, you could actually feed a family of six on 2,400 square feet. That's right. And you could do that in the city. I mean, you're not actually destitute until you lose your home. And that's coming, and I mentioned that to you in the opening broadcast. I said, listen, there's 20 million foreclosures coming up over the next 3 years. 20 million. Got that right out of the International Forecaster, which is why I suggest to my students that you subscribe to one or more of these newsletters so that you can keep abreast about and upon what's going on in the world as opposed to what your government wants you to know. I mean, it's good to know what your government wants you to know, and God bless Katie Couric and Brian Williams for letting us know what we're supposed to know. But I don't think that's going to save you off of the great ship America. Now, I've been reading from the last issue, or the last program, I introduced you here to The Privateer. This is the early January issue, written by Bill Buckler. And the reason I subscribe to, or receive the International Forecaster, is because I want to know what's going on in the world. And I need a report, and I get two reports a week from Bob Chapman. But I don't always understand everything that Chapman writes about, because they use economic terms. And the guy that can explain these economic terms in layman's language, and teach you economics 101, right in the comfort of your own living room, is this fellow Buckler who puts out The Privateer. Now, this is an economic newsletter also, and I'm not slighting the man in the least. It's filled with information. But I got to tell you that this guy has a knack or a gift for explaining and teaching the complexities of economics in such a way, in layman's language. This is one of the reasons that I really like this guy. This guy does not use 5-syllable, double-jointed, knee-action words to impress you as to how smart he is. He writes in very down-to-earth, simple, plain words that even those of us that drive trucks and fix pipes can understand. On page 11, he has a story here about pouring more into a full cup. He says, Mr. Bush is now bantying about plans to inject some fiscal stimulus into the U.S. economy. It's not as though his administration has been doing this in the past. After all, the funded debt is up a mere $4 trillion or so since he first took office in 2001. The Fed is universally expected to go on lowering official U.S. rates when they meet at the end of January. And this, of course, has nothing to do with trying to stimulate the U.S. economy. They just want Americans to start borrowing again. Take a look at the new credit which has already been generated in the United States. The facts are in the Global Report in this issue under the headline, "The Monster U.S. Credit Machine." It isn't possible to fill a cup which is already overflowing. It isn't possible to put out a fire by pouring gasoline upon it. But go further. Take a look at the real problem facing the United States and the rest of the world, for that matter, as we enter 2008. Over 2007, international reserves, that is, the reserves held by the central banks around the world and mostly composed of United States dollars and U.S. denominated paper, surged by $1.2 trillion, or by 27%. Pause. In 1 year, the total reserves of the world increased by more than a quarter. In 1 year. Boys and girls, now that's approaching hyperinflation. And we Americans are pouring this inflation out, not only in the United States, but we're pouring it out around the world. In order to fund all of these imports coming from all the countries around the world, we're simply printing dollars and paying for them. It's really not payment, it's called discharge inequity. And these people expect that when they take these dollars in, that at some point in the future, they're going to be able to trade those dollars for Caterpillar tractors or Cadillac automobiles, which is a fiction. That isn't going to happen. It ain't going to happen because we can't produce it. It ain't going to happen because we don't have the industrial capacity to produce it. It's been exported. It's been offshored, outsourced. That's why I said at the opening of today's program, I said, if I was a betting man, I'd be betting on famine. I think that food is going to be more valuable than gold. In fact, there's a prophecy in the Bible that tells us, he said, this is our God now speaking, he says, the day's coming when you're going to take your gold and silver and throw it to the, in the streets and hide in the caves with the bats and the moles. He describes a time of international discombobulation worldwide that is going to be so horrendous that it can only be described in biblical terms in the book of Revelation. Now, that's what's upon us. That's why I'm sitting here saying I think that there's nothing better, or there can't be a better business than food in a famine. So when we're talking about business, there are certain businesses that are going to go upside down. I think DoorDash and designer jeans and designer handbags and designer shoes and all the trappings of the Hollywood crap is going to be cast aside. And we'll be thinking in terms of high-top shoes, bib overalls, pinto beans, and cornbread. And I think that if you have shoes, bib overalls, cornbread, and pinto beans, you're going to be counted as wealthy. And I can remember back in the 1940s when I was a little kid during World War II that all of the kids wore bib overalls and Buster Brown high-top shoes. So did the adults. Now, we weren't starving to death. We did have enough food. Times were pretty poor. We didn't have an automobile, and we didn't have gasoline to burn in it, and we didn't have the consumer goods and telephones, and we did have electric lights. We had electricity. But we didn't have all the gadgets, you know, that you've got in the kitchen today, you know, with tile floors and formica countertops. But we got along quite nicely, and we had plenty to eat. But it doesn't mean that you're always going to be that way. So like I said, I think we should be thinking about famine. Not just food shortages. No. Now I'm talking about no food at all. None. Zero. Zilch. In the siege that we saw here a little earlier. A siege. An international embargo against the United States and probably against you Canadians also. And the Australians. I can't say that positively. Maybe you Australians and Canadians are paying your bills, but from what I'm reading here in the papers, you're not paying your bills any better than we are. And that being the case, you know, you Australians, look north. Just take a look at a map there. Look north. There's 1.3 billion real, mean, ornery Chinamen up there to your north that are casting covetous eyes upon the empty spaces of Australia, protected by the nuclear umbrella of the United States, which is headed for national captivity. Did you grasp that one, you Aussies? By the way, this Buckler now is writing from Queensland, Australia. Now, to go a little further and take a real look at the problem facing the United States and the rest of the world, we have just increased the money supply worldwide by 27%, and it is this recycling of U.S. inflationary excess into the bowels of the central banks around the world which has enabled the United States to go on credit expanding without the price and interest rate pressures which normally accompany such a course of action. At least it did allow the United States to continue with its credit expansion until the wheels fell off last August. So I want to point out, I'm going to underline that for you. The wheels fell off last August. August of 2007 is when this thing started to turn upside down. Now, if you want the word subprime to have some real meaning, it could not be better used than to define the state of these international reserves. They are inflating, in the true meaning of the word, at an annual rate of 22.5%. 22.5%. Boys and girls, that's hyperinflation territory, 22%. And that's what it takes to get a two-year increase of 50%. This is utterly unsustainable. And on top of that, the currency in which they're denominated, U.S. dollars, has been steadily losing in exchange value against all currencies which use these dollars as reserves throughout this two-year period. The risk of holding, not to mention accumulating these reserves, is not even closely matched by the interest rates and offer for the paper. If there's a situation in the global financial system which is totally unsustainable as we enter 2008, this is it. Now, boys and girls, are offering 3% interest and you're inflating your currency at 22% a year. Boys and girls, that ain't going to go on forever. I don't know how long it's going to go on. Maybe a year or 2 years or 3 years. I don't know. Now, most people will say to me, well, I don't understand all this economic stuff over here. I just leave it for the professionals. Okay. You go ahead and leave it to the professionals. That's what we've been doing for 70 years. When I was a kid, everybody had a one-year food supply in their pantries. Today, you people have 3 days in your refrigerator. Walmart, where you rely upon your daily supply of bread, only has a one-day supply that's delivered every morning. Boys and girls, when this food is shut off from our international suppliers, and in America, understand, boys and girls, 50% of what you're buying out of your grocery stores today is coming from outside of our borders. I mean, when they shut this off, boys and girls, you're going to have food shortages coming right out in the open. You can't feed 300 million Americans with what's being produced in the United States today. It's a new economic paradigm that hasn't been here forever. The old days are gone. You've outsourced your economic viability around the world, kids. America is no longer economically viable. We have to have a $2 billion loan per day to sustain us. Hey, kids, I don't think that's good. That's why I said when I opened up, I said, I think famine's coming here. It's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Now, it isn't that Americans can't produce. It isn't that Americans can't produce our food and fiber. It's that for whatever reason, we've decided we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to get modern and international. We're going to let the Chinese and the Filipinos fill the gap. Well, okay, today, boys and girls, you can have cherries in January. But there's a time coming when you're going to wish you had pinto beans and cornbread, I think. Now, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate. Let me do that one over again. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour, an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the privateer. Let me give you Bill Buckler's name and address here. It's William A.M. Buckler at Post Office Box 2004 in Noosa Heads, that's spelled N-O-O-S-A, Heads, H-E-A-D-S, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Probably the easiest way to get a hold of him would be on the internet, www.the-privateer.com. Once more, that's www.the-privateer.com. Or you can get them on the email at capt@the-privateer.com. If you want to call them, it's, the phone number is 617-5471-1960. Their phone again is 617-5471-1960. The subscription's $180 a year, 25 issues. 12 issues is $100. 2-year subscription, 50 issues is $300. Now, those are Australian dollars. Listen to what else he has to say. He says, if you want the word subprime to have any real meaning, it could not be better used than to define the state of these international reserves. Now, these international reserves are increasing at the rate of 22% in the year 2007. They promised to be as much or more in the year 2008. Boys and girls, we have entered the hyperinflation arena. Now, if you want the ingredients for a perfect financial storm, just combine this fact with the situation inside the United States. We're entering a presidential election year with a lame duck president, one who is now about to enter the last year of his permitted 8-year tenure. The Democrats have held power in both houses of the U.S. Congress since November of '06. They have conclusively proven themselves to be totally unable and unwilling to change the policies of the U.S. government one iota, not in the foreign policy field and certainly not in the economic, financial, fiscal, or monetary field. Internally, prices are soaring upwards in the United States, and on top of that, unemployment is now rising even by the official statistics. On January 4th, the U.S. Labor Department reported that official U.S. employment had leaped to 5% in December from 4.7% in November. This is the biggest month-on-month increase in 2 years. For the first time since July of 2003, private sector payrolls actually fell in December of 2007, and the manufacturing sector has been falling for years. Now the services sector is falling too. The only area where employment increased was, to no one's surprise, is the government sector. Internally generated economic growth. 2008 will be the year when the U.S. government, to its horror, discovers that it can no longer count on the rest of the world to use its savings to mop up U.S. credit excesses. As already stated in this issue of The Privateer, accelerating price inflation is now global. In order to continue to generate the credit expansion, the United States will find that it will have to sell more and more of the debt paper required internally. This literally cannot be done, not without a huge upwards surge in domestic U.S. interest rates. The demand is not there, and even if it was, neither savings nor earnings are even remotely sufficient to the task. Now, there is a pariah on two fronts. The privateer has said this before, but because it cannot be said too often, let us say it again. The American people cannot and should not be confused with the American government. Yes, like the people of other democratic nations, they do have the periodic chance to throw the rascals out. But as in all other democratic nations, Americans only get to choose who wins the election. They have no say in who runs, nor do they have any say in the party platform. And of those who are up for election, those are chosen by the insiders, not by the voters. The performance of the Democrats in the Congress since they achieved power in 2006, there should be a sufficient illustration of the actual lack of choices facing the American people in regard to their government. The excesses of the Bush administration on all fronts has long since made the U.S. a global pariah in the field of foreign policy. 2008 will be the year when the well-earned stature tips over into the realm of international economics and finance. The increasing global resistance to go on absorbing U.S. debt paper under the pretense that it constitutes a viable global reserve is well documented. More and more nations are reducing the level of U.S. dollars in their reserves. More and more nations are, or soon will be, buying and selling vital commodities like oil in currencies other than U.S. dollars. And ultimately, the only solution to the state of the financial world today is to return to sound money. Politically, to return to even a semblance of freedom and liberty can be made without it. Monetarily, a sound economic foundation requires savings, which requires confidence in the long-term purchasing power of that which is being saved. Promises to pay do not provide that. Only sound money does. So here's another sound money advocate. Now, we're not going to have sound money. When this thing turns upside down, which it inevitably must, the government will jump in with both feet with an economic stimulus package. They will run world economic excesses until we have hyperinflation. This hyperinflation is going to produce what it has already produced in Zimbabwe. You know, have you heard of this little country called Zimbabwe? Well, it used to be called, in olden days, it used to be called Rhodesia. And this little country called Rhodesia, it was a first line, first world nation. They had economic prosperity. They had an industrial base. I mean, they had a very prosperous country there. And in 1980, the blacks down there said, well, what we want is freedom. You know, we're tired of this this crap, and we want to have black rule. So they got it. And then Rhodesia has been a little microcosm of what we can expect in South Africa, and then Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States, and Western Europe. Because they chose a Marxist government, and that's what all of us have done. We've been practicing communism now for the last, 70 years, since 1933 in this country. And so when we're discussing Zimbabwe, there is no logic. These people have lost it. Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, is a gorgeous country with a wonderful way of life, which has been destroyed by a madman. Ever since the winds of change and the sellout of 500,000 white Rhodesians, there's been nothing but despair. The gross domestic product has declined for 7 consecutive years. The breadbasket of South Central Africa no longer exists. A land reform put in motion by Marxist President Mugabe has destroyed the farming industry in the nation. Some of the world's finest tobacco no longer is grown and sent to market from Rhodesia. Tourism and mining have collapsed, particularly in gold and platinum. Unemployment is 80%. Did you get that, boys and girls? Unemployment is 80%, and the country is bankrupt. Yet the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange is the best performing stock exchange in the world. Industrials are up about 600% just this year, and it's up 12,000% year over year. For those who have money, the only place to go with that money is into and to make a make-believe profit in a make-believe market. Monetary policy has rendered money useless. The loss in the currency's purchasing power is 1,729% per year. And as you can see, sometimes stock prices can be driven by monetary conditions and not favorable economic developments. Zimbabwe's market is a game. Eventually, the currency and the market will be totally worthless. I mentioned this to you earlier. Let me mention it to you again. Here in the United States, in 1930, when we had gold and paper at par, we had 100%, 100-cent purchasing power. By the year 2000, it had dropped to 97 cents. By the year 2007, it's dropped another penny off of its 1930 purchasing power. Put another way, our purchasing power in the United States from 2000 to 2007 dropped 33% in 7 years. It's nowhere near what it is in Zimbabwe at 1,729% a year, but we're well on the road. And we're going to catch these guys in Zimbabwe very shortly. And we, too, are going to have 80% unemployment. We, too, are going to have the same kind of industrial and economic collapse that they've had in Rhodesia. Now, listen, you know, when you wring your nose, you get blood. When you practice communism, you get to stand in line and share the shortage. Now, that's what communism is all about. It's about standing in line and sharing the shortage. Now, listen to some of the shortages here. Zimbabwe. The country has witnessed a massive spate of price increases of all basic commodities after the festive season, raising prospects of an implosion of the economy in 2008, and worse is to come, with prices likely to increase tenfold this year, economists say. A survey conducted by the Zimbabwe Independent reveals this week that a new wave of price hikes, reminiscent of last June, which resulted in government imposing a price freeze, has once again hit the country. A 2-liter bottle of cooking oil that was selling for 8 million Zimbabwe dollars before the festive season now costs 13 million Zimbabwe dollars. On Tuesday, government said the gazetted price for cooking oil was 7 million. So the advertised, the official price for cooking oil is 7 million Zimbabwe dollars. Boys and girls, they had a strike down there where the prosecuting attorneys went on strike. And they wanted a wage increase, and they got it. They got a 600% wage increase. So let's suppose they're making $1,000 a month. And you get a 600% wage increase, six times that amount, $6,000 a month. My God, the inflation rate's 1,700% a month. These guys are still falling behind, just not quite as far behind or quite as fast. The country can't produce soap. They have to import it. And the imported price is double what the official price is within the country. You walk into a grocery store, there's nothing on the shelves. That's why I said to you, I believe that food is going to be more valuable than gold, because it already is in Zimbabwe. Boys and girls, the gasoline, the last time I saw, was $230,000 a gallon, and it wasn't even available at $230,000. If you had $230,000, you couldn't buy a gallon of gas, because there isn't any in the gas stations. Their money is so useless, so worthless, that nobody will sell them any gasoline. Who in the hell wants money that depreciates like that? So as a result of it, they have copious shortages of everything. Now, we can live, you know, without gasoline. Not as well, but you can live without it. But, you know, cooking oil is kind of an essential. You cannot live without cooking oil forever. So you're going to need some cooking oil. Your body has to have some oil. And it's not available. I mean, they got prices, but even at those prices, it's not available. And I can sit here and read you more. The Consumer Council of Zimbabwe said most prices being charged were not justified. The rate at which prices are increasing, which are not justified, is a result of speculation by some business people who want to make quick money, said the CCZ. That's what you're going to hear here in the United States. And Hillary Clinton and government officials are going to say, "Why, these price increases are not justified. We're going to have price controls." Well, okay. Hell, we've used price controls before. They never worked in the past. What in the hell makes you think they're going to work in the future? We've had this very same problem in the past, and we have always addressed the problem with more government intervention. Government intervention is what causes the problem, so we need more government intervention to solve the problem. That's what we're told. And so the government always comes in and involves itself in the economy to solve the problem and make it worse. And the people haven't got a clue, cannot connect the dots. The people in Zimbabwe, they can't connect the dots. What they're doing is crying out to their government to solve the problem. Hell, the problem is being caused by their government. I tell you again, boys and girls, if your house is being set on fire by an arsonist, that guy is probably not the guy you want to call to put the fire out. And if the monetary inflation is being caused by your government, calling upon that government to solve the monetary excesses is probably not the guy to call. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, there is another modality that we could call upon, and it's called the marketplace. The marketplace. And it has to do with gold and silver, hard money. And we don't have to have the government. For instance, I'm the only guy in Ozark County, Missouri, that uses hard money. And there's 10,000 people live in this county. Boys and girls, it is not necessary for the other 9,999 residents of Ozark County to use hard money in order for me to use it. It's irrelevant to me. I use it, and I have my living standards, and I have my business geared to hard money. And it profits me handsomely. And I'm not complaining like I did when I had the government operating and managing my personal economy. When Northwestern Mutual was doing it, I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy with the government. I wasn't happy with the insurance industry. Now I'm very happy with me manipulating and managing my own monetary affairs. I'd like to suggest that you give that a thought. That's what subsistence and survival is all about. It's what making money is all about. It's what profit is all about. It's what farming is all about. The most profitable business ever conceived by the mind of God himself is farming. And you know, when you're talking to farmers, they'll tell you, "Oh, no, farming is not very profitable. We're all losing money." Well, boys and girls, all of the farmers who are losing money are farmers who are on price supports and on government economic programs. When the government involved itself in farming, yes, it's true, those farmers went broke. Those farmers are in difficult economic straits. But let me show you something about farming that maybe you'd never heard before. You see, when you take one seed of corn, just one corn seed, take it out in your backyard and just put it in the ground about 2 inches under the ground, sprinkle it a little bit with water, and then leave it alone. And pretty soon you'll get a corn stalk and it'll grow up and it'll produce 2 ears of corn. The 2 ears of corn will have 16 rows and they'll have 436 kernels of corn on each cob. Now add 436 and 436. Let me see if I can do that quickly. That's 2, 7, 8. That's 872. All right, now that's an 87,200% return. Now, you don't have to irrigate this. The rain will water it for you. You don't need to manufacture any sunlight. It comes automatically. It's free. So to produce photosynthesis, you just need rain in due season and the sunlight on the plant growing in the dirt in your backyard, and it will produce 87,200%. Boys and girls, there's no bank or insurance company in the world that makes 87,200% profit per annum. Only farming does that. Now, I'm a farmer, and I'm telling you that farming is very, very profitable, but government intervention in farming is very, very poverty prone. So I stay as far away from government as I can get. And I stay as close as I can get to gold and silver. And I think that if we follow these biblical principles, limited government, hard money, and farming, you'll do very well. I think that food is going to be more valuable than gold. And the economic newsletters are telling us that because they're telling us we're headed to hyperinflation. And they're reporting to us that we have a siege coming. And it's called the International Balance of Payments. International Balance of Payments. You see, here in America, we're buying $800 billion a year from overseas and we're paying for it with $142 billion. Boys and girls, that's not going to go on forever. That's unsustainable. How long can it go on? I don't know. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a priest. I'm not a pope. But I can tell you that's not going to go on forever. Last August, the world's economy, the world's economic system began to unwind. And it's in the process of unwinding right now before your eyes. Remember the International Forecaster and the Privateer, two newsletters that you need to stay abreast of what the hell's going on in the world outside of Katie Couric and Brian Williams. Yeah, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. So let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.